Hey everyone, my research project for Music History 2 was on the significance of Brahms's First Symphony in the face of Beethoven's legacy, and just kind of a discussion of how all the various elements of the cultural time period, Beethoven's legacy, Brahms's compositions all kind of interplay to create this narrative that I personally have found really interesting and really enjoyed spending time researching. So I think it's really important to understand the scope of all this to really get a good background of what's going on even before Beethoven comes onto the scene. So before Beethoven, absolute music was kind of struggling to be respected on the same level as vocal music. Not to be denied that it did have an established niche with people like Mozart and Haydn, etc. There was an accepted place for absolute music, but there were a lot of naysayers like Immanuel Kant that were saying things to the effect of that instrumental music was mere fleeting pleasure and had no place in any sort of cultural significance. Again, this is not because instrumental music was looked down upon entirely. Kant was definitely at the more extreme end of this opinion, but the fact that anyone at all holds an opinion like that speaks to the state of instrumental music in comparison to vocal music, considering that no one would ever say anything like that about choral or vocal music. And then Beethoven kind of sprung on the scene. And he really turned that sentiment on its head, and no one would really dare to say such a thing of instrumental music after Beethoven had his say. He premiered, you know, symphony after symphony that demonstrated his significant understanding of the symphonic form. He was really skilled at manipulation of texture and instrumentation of the orchestra. He was extraordinarily skilled at composing melodies. Many of his melodies are very recognizable and are used in a lot of different media today. And one other thing that was very unique to Beethoven was, well, not very unique, there were other people that were doing this as well, but he really kind of polished this skill was manipulation of the hard form of a symphony. He did a lot of things like movements of symphonies flowing one into the other without having specific breaks or significant changes of character. They just kind of all morphed one into the other in an easy transition. He would also quote himself within his symphonies using melodies from previous movements in later movements of his symphony, kind of creating a more ambiguous feel to the symphony and giving it a greater cohesiveness as a whole. One other thing that he did was he really elevated the role of the symphonic finale. He created a element of the finale where it was much more of a culmination, and it was less of the lighthearted kind of movement that it often was before Beethoven, to a very triumphant, culminating, awe-inspiring kind of feeling that really resonated with audiences. He also was really great at getting at the heart and meaning of music and what he was trying to express with varying techniques that gave instrumental music just as much resonance with audience and meaning that choral music did. So you kind of get the idea. Beethoven was a genius, and everyone knew it at the time. No one really during that time was doing everything that he did to the scale that he was doing it. So Beethoven now is a pillar of not only the absolute music genre, but the entire music world in general. He was highly respected and was able to give absolute music that kind of respect as well. So the result of all this is a massive legacy that's connected to Beethoven and his music and what he accomplished, particularly in the genre of the symphony. So after Beethoven, there was kind of a strange time period with composers faced with how to deal with the legacy of Beethoven looming over them. They continuously had to deal with the fact that if they premiered a symphony, there was a good chance that one of Beethoven's symphonies was also on the same concert program. And even if it wasn't on the same concert program, there was inevitably this comparison between anyone that would try to premiere a symphony and a comparison with Beethoven's symphonies. And everyone was rightfully scared of this. And so as a result, there were comparatively few symphonies written during this time period after Beethoven. And those who did attempt it, it was not uncommon for them to start the symphonies only to discard them multiple times, or when they would finally premiere one, it wasn't until after many, many years of working and editing and revising, and it just in general took a very long time for people to be willing to put symphonies out there. It was also a unique time in music history in which composers were much more self-conscious of their work, in the sense that they were aware of how society is now remembering and revering past composers like Mozart and Haydn, and especially Beethoven, and are really concerned with how future generations are going to remember them and their contributions to the musical world. So obviously everyone really wanted to be remembered as significantly as Beethoven was, but more commonly they were worried about being remembered negatively in comparison with Beethoven. So they're really concerned about being remembered as the guy that just copied Beethoven or couldn't be original in their own work. So during this time period, many turned to tone poems, serenades, small chamber music, sonatas, song cycles, things like that. A lot of solo vocal music and leads and that type of thing. So not only this, but the new German school of thought with Wagner at its head was enjoying more and more attention, with their opinions becoming much more popular. The new German school was primarily a school of thought that dealt with how to move on to the next phase, the next development of music, often focusing particularly on how to move past Beethoven and what he did in the genre of the symphony. Wagner himself was of the opinion that the symphonic genre is dead, in the sense that Beethoven had done all that could be done to develop the symphony, and that there was no more growth or development in store for the symphony, and that it should be left in the past. He believed that he himself was Beethoven's successor because of his work in the area of the musical drama, which is a hybrid of the opera and the symphony. Wagner believed that the musical drama was the next step in musical progression. His primary argument for this opinion was in Beethoven's Ninth and Final Symphony. In the finale, he added the use of a chorus, and Wagner used this as an indication that there was no further to go with absolute music, that the only way to better it was with the addition of a chorus, with the addition of vocal music. So then, now that we understand this whole background situation that composers are dealing with, we get to Brahms, who is an extraordinarily talented composer, but like his peers, he's living under this massive shadow of Beethoven's legacy, as well as the new German school of thought. So early on in his development, Brahms is encouraged to make the acquaintance of Robert and Clara Schumann. And after sharing some of his music with the Schumanns, Robert declares him as the most talented composer he has ever had the pleasure of meeting, and names him the master of the symphony without Brahms ever having composed a symphony yet. He declares this sentiment publicly in his essay Neue Bahnen, or New Beginnings. So I know we all really enjoy being able to have someone important give us validation and deem us worthy of being declaimed to the public, but in this case, this was probably the worst thing that Schumann could have done, because composers everywhere during this time are already facing an extraordinary amount of pressure, and anyone who dares attempt a symphony had better be ready to invite the harsh judgment of critics, So for Schumann to introduce Brahms to the world as the master of the symphony so soon after Beethoven puts Brahms on everyone's radar, waiting and watching for the day that he would premiere a symphony. And Brahms was very highly aware of this and wanted to prove his worth, but he also wanted to prove that the symphony is not dead and that it does have a future for further development and accomplishment. So similar to many of the composers during this time period, Brahms waited for a very, very long time before he dared premiere his first symphony. He was in his mid-40s, and it took a good, I think it was around 10 years from the start of his work on the symphony to its premiere. And upon the premiere of his symphony, this is where things really kind of hit the fan. So Brahms finally completes his symphony and finally premieres it to the greater public that has been so eagerly awaiting his first foray into the symphonic genre. And all that anyone can talk about is the one moment in the finale of his symphony in which he alludes to the infamous and very highly recognizable Ode to Joy theme from the finale of Beethoven's Ninth Symphony. And a lot of people accused him of just being wildly unoriginal and thinking that he could get away with using such a recognizable theme as inspiration for his own symphonic finale. And others claim that it was an example of the anxiety of influence, in which a composer is so aware of the influence and pressure on him that he inadvertently creates in the exact same style or inadvertently borrows from the overbearing influence. Some were saying that Brahms accidentally referenced the Ninth Symphony and was trying to claim that melody as his own creativity. So, in response to these accusations of the Ode to Joy theme being used in his symphony, Brahms replies, "Any ass can see that." With this response, it's quite obvious that Brahms clearly knew what he was doing and that it was no accident. Now, Brahms undoubtedly knew the situation he was in, and not only as a composer coming after Beethoven, but as the subject of Schumann's Neubauten. He also is well aware of the extraordinary significance that Beethoven's Ninth had, especially the culminating Ode to Joy theme in the finale. He is also aware of the value of originality during that time, so for him to choose to reference not only the Beethoven's greatest symphony, but to reference the most pivotal moment in said symphony and run the risk of looking unoriginal, Brahms was clearly trying to make a statement and knew very well the kind of attention and criticism he was inviting from the general public. There was no way in the world that he would have done such a thing as an accident or without significant thought, unless he was intending his symphony to not only be his debut into the classical music world of the symphonic genre, but a direct response to the new German school of thought. Because again, he's facing this idea that the symphony's dead, and so he's facing essentially head on this accusation and picking a very pivotal moment in the history of the symphony to address this. So looking into the way in which Brahms uses this theme in his symphony, we can see more evidence that this is true. For one, he does not use voices. Brahms utilizes a very vocal-sounding melody that could easily be set to voices, but refrains from doing so intentionally, making the point that instrumental music can and will stand alone as a musically significant. Second, Brahms does not use the Ode to Joy theme in the same way that Beethoven does. Beethoven uses it as the triumphal culminating theme of divine ecstasy in his finale. Brahms, however, uses it as a secondary theme in his finale, indicating that he is asserting that this pivotal moment in Beethoven's symphony is great, yes, but it is not infallible. It's not the end-all and be-all of the symphonic works. He then manipulates it like he would any other thematic material, and even sets it as less important and second in importance to his own Elbhorn theme, asserting that he as a composer has the skill to go beyond what Beethoven had accomplished. So Brahms chooses perhaps the most recognizable and significant moment in the history of the symphony to face head-on the cultural and musical pressures of the time, asserting his dominance and essentially blowing Wagner's opinion of the death of the symphony out of the water. And that's essentially the gist of what my research project was on. I hope you guys got something from it. Thanks for listening.